Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, August the 11th, 2017. Please excuse me that I get a little confused about dates and times, etc. As I get older, I have a few more glitches. In the meantime, I love reading to you. Today's headline is Del Hay excited about new position. Dateline Danville. Sadly, Del Hay, that's D-E-L-H-A-Y-E, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, will be sworn in Tuesday morning, her second day on the job, and is excited to start her new position as Danville Election Commission Director next week. Del Hay, a Danville High School graduate, also is glad she has a little time to get familiar with the office before having an election to oversee next year. She starts in the office on Monday. She replaces Will Nesbitt, who left as director in April. Del Hay received an associate's degree from Danville Area Community College in Business Management. She has been office manager at John Leverins Masonry. She also previously was general manager at Morrison Flamingo Stephan Incorporated until it closed, and also served as accountant executive at YRC Freight. She said she learned about the position being open from a friend and applied. Del Hay was selected by the Danville Election Commission's three-member board, consisting of Barb Bailey, chairwoman, Charles Bostich, vice chairman, and Thomas J. Millen, secretary. Bailey said they were impressed by Del Hay's qualifications and experience working with the public. Del Hay thought the job fit in well with her work history. But she also adds, dealing with elections is totally different for me. I'm looking forward to working with Leora Clark and Assistant Director Carla Dukes, she said. There is a three-day conference Del Hay will attend in Galesburg to learn more about election processes. Del Hay said she also will have time to train election judges for next year's elections. The Danville Election Commission is in charge of conducting elections in the city of Danville. It oversees city, county, state, and federal elections and also handles voter registration for the city of Danville. The office also will start moving out of the Vermilion County Courthouse Annex and into the former federal courthouse around the first of the year. It's planned to have the office fully moved by June 2018. I appreciate the opportunity, Del Hay said after becoming Election Commission Director. She also looks forward to being involved with the election process. The office also recently purchased five new voting machines to be completely converted, according to Dukes. In her free time, Del Hay likes to take day trips with her husband Rick on their Harley-Davidson motorcycle. Between them, they have five children and nine grandchildren who they love to spend time with. And the next article has the headline, Hoopston Church Opens Teen Center. Dateline Hoopston. Hoopston's First Church of God had an open house recently for its new Harbor Community Youth Center, 907 West Main Street. The center, part of the ministry of the church, had a soft opening last March. Located in the former Wolf Blurton Funeral Home, the Harbor gives teens a place to hang out on Friday and Saturday nights, to play games, be with friends, and relax. It also offers help with homework. Vince Gossett was chosen as the center's director. He served as one of the Church of God's Addiction Support Group co-leaders. He served in this capacity in the community for about 6 years. Gossett said that it gives them, he means teens, a safe place to forget their troubles for a few hours. The church raised $50,000 to obtain the building and other necessary items for the center in one day, according to Noah Featherstone, youth minister. Featherstone and his wife, Katana, and church volunteers spent many hours painting and decorating the building to get it ready. The Harbor is open 7 to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday nights. At present, the center serves only high school students, but plans are to expand to include younger children and work with other churches in the community for the benefit of the youth. For information or questions about the Harbor, the contact number is 217-283-9330. And the next article has the headline, Pick a Card, Trivia Touches on History, Area Fun Facts. Dateline Danville. Some of the Danville and Vermilion County trivia questions might be a little hard for some residents, such as, on what Danville mural is the Barrel of Monkeys painted? Answer, the Balloon Classic mural downtown. Or some people might have a general idea about a few of the trivia question topics, such as the ones regarding the former Chuckles Candy Factory, and Thursdays being Lemon Flavor Day, or the movie The Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds. Being shown in 1974 at the Fisher Theater, testing a Danville ordinance banning R-rated movies. Tyson Terhune, senior planning with the city's Urban Services Department, said history can be dry and boring to some people, but they tried to find some fun facts and create some talking points for the public. The trivia cards are part of more public outreach efforts by the Danville Historic Preservation Commission. There are Danville trivia card sets of about 100 to 110 questions in total, located at several restaurants and other locations in the city. The answers are all listed below the questions. Locations of the trivia cards are Cafe 13, Charlotte's, Fat Man's Warehouse, Jocko's, Mad Goat Coffee, Stoney's, and Yorkshire Bed and Breakfast. The tabletop trivia cards located in the little black holder at Stoney's restaurant have gone over really well and have been a big hit with customers, Stoney's owner Michelle Tables said. They are conversation starters, and the questions are fun for customers to try to answer. It's a really cool thing. That was a great idea, Tables said. She said some people have even been taking the cards, and Tables would like to see more of them. She said customers have really been talking about them. It was Terhune's idea to create the cards. He'd done so before in Lena, in northern Illinois, where he used to work, before coming to the city about a year ago. It's just something that went over so well, he said about the trivia cards being part of a bigger project. Terhune said he thought, why not? Let's try that here. He read Danville history books and also received help in coming up with questions from Historic Preservation Commission members, the Vermilion County Museum, and also Danville Community Improvement Superintendent Shelley Larson on questions about the murals. The cards then were printed in-house through the city. There's more of a focus on Danville trivia, but also questions concerning Vermilion County. He said the commission hopes to educate the public a little more about Danville and Vermilion County history in a fun way. Terhune plans to check in with the locations at the end of summer and see how the trivia cards went over at each location. He said Jocko's Pizza Inn employees were excited to receive them. Terhune said they hope to come up with another round of additional questions and change them at locations in the future. In facilitating the Historic Preservation Commission meetings, he said the group doesn't always see a lot of activity with people nominating historic homes or other actions. He's been reviewing that what it does and how it can get more of the public involved. He said the trivia cards and setting up booths, such as the Downtown Music and Arts Festival, Culture Shock, were some inexpensive ideas he and the commission members have thought of to spread more information about historic preservation. People can answer the trivia cards and talk about them on their own time. It's not a lecture or a tour. It's just something out there in the background, Terhune said, adding that he hopes people have been enjoying them. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Jean, spelled J-E-A-N-N-E, L. Lockhart, 75, of Noblesville, Indiana, who died on Saturday, July 29th, 1017, at Prairie Lakes campus in Noblesville. A celebration of her life will be held at 4 p.m. on Saturday, August 12th, at Randall and Roberts Funeral Center, 1685 Westfield Road in Noblesville, with visitation from 2 p.m. to the time of service. And the next is for Arnold Lee Boze, B-O-Z-E, Keeling, 74, of Vetersburg, who died on Tuesday, August 8th. Funeral services will be at 6 p.m. Saturday, August 12th, at Dickerson Funeral Home in Vetersburg, with Pastor Greg McDonald officiating. Visitation will be 1 to 5:45 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home, with Masonic service beginning at 5:45 p.m. Military honors will be given by American Legion Post 288 and the U.S. Army. Private family burial will be at a later date at Bone Break Cemetery, with Pastor Joe Dodds officiating. Memorial contributions may be given to the American Legion Post 288 or the American Cancer Society. And the next is for Donald Don Lee Treadway of Georgetown, who died on Tuesday, April 8th at St. John's Hospital in Springfield. A celebration of Don's life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 12th at Sunset Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown, with Pastor Gary Ferris officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 11th, at the funeral home, with Masonic rites at 7 p.m. He will be laid to rest in Oak Hill Cemetery, Danville. Memorial donations may be given to the Scottish Rite Bodies Masonic Lodge in Danville. And the next is for Audrey Rose Gilligan Baker, 92, of Oakwood, who died at on Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. A celebration of life service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, August 11th at Sunset's Oakwood Funeral Chapel, 105 East South Main Street in Oakwood. Burial will be at Oakwood Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. on Friday, August 11th, that's today, at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in Audrey's name to the First Evangelical Methodist Church in Oakwood. And the next is for Gary Ettinger, 59, of Cayuga, Indiana, died on Thursday, August 10th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street, Tilton. And the next is for William Bill Gossett, of 48, of Rossville, who died on August 3rd, 2017. A memorial service will be held at 5 p.m. Sunday at First Church of God, Hoopston, with Pastor Dan First officiating. Visitation will be from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday at the church. Blurton Funeral Home, 309 East Washington Street, Hoopston, is in charge of arrangements. And the next is for Jean L. Jackson, 73, of Danville, who died on Tuesday, April 8th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. And the next is for Reva Walls, 95, of Danville, who died on Tuesday, April 8th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. And now we go back to the news articles, and the first has the headline, Divers Recover Man's Body. Dateline Hillary. A rescue team recovered the body of a man on Thursday afternoon who had been missing since his boat capsized Wednesday. Vermilion County Sheriff Pat Hartshorn said the body was located about 2:30 p.m. and removed from the private pond west of Danville. His name was not immediately released. Three people, an adult male, an adult woman, and a two-year-old child, were in a small boat on a pond near the intersection of Polk and Blackford Streets late Wednesday morning. The boat capsized and the male went underwater. The woman and the child, who was wearing a flotation device, were able to reach the shore and call deputies for help. The Vermilion County Sheriff's Department underwater search and rescue team continued to search into the evening. The search was called off at night and resumed at 7 a.m. Thursday, Hartshorn said, noting that 27 and a half hours had gone into the search. Sophisticated sonar equipment was taken to the site to help divers. However, the divers faced obstacles such as the depth of the strip mine pool and poor visibility due to murky water, he said. The divers' ropes also got hung up on stuff that had been dumped into the pond over the years. The Vermilion County Coroner is working with the family. And now some community briefs. And in Danville, Chris Healthy Aging Center presents Dancing with the Stars at the Starlight Ball on three Wednesdays in August. Music for the August 16th event will feature Bev Wolf and company. Dancing with the Stars is for ballroom dancers of all ages. Each event takes place from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the Harrison Park Clubhouse on West Vury Street. Cost is $5 per person. And next is the Class of 1972 Reunion. The Danville High School Class of 1972's 45th reunion will be August 18th to the 20th. Classmates will meet at the M. Bucks Friday night concert downtown from 6 to 9 on August 18th. Danville Boat Club at 6 p.m. August 19th with a cocktail buffet reunion party and DJ, $30 per person and a cash bar, and Danville Boat Club at 9 a.m. August 20th for Viking Brunch, $15 per person. Reunion invitation and reservation reply card can be printed from Facebook or can be emailed or mailed upon request to mainly Marie at att.net. And now community brief from Hoopston. Pain program set. Through September 15th, Chris Healthy Aging Center is offering the 8-week chronic disease self-management program. The group meets 1 to 3 p.m. every Friday at the Hoopston Public Library. Family members and caregivers are welcome. Attendees will receive a free book and refreshments will be served. Registration is not required but encouraged. To register, call Lisa Rogers at 443-2999 or email clienthelp, all one word, at agestrong.org. New participants will be accepted throughout the program. And now, an article with the headline, Anderson Church Offers Free Community Dinners for Needy. Dateline, Anderson, Indiana. As soon as Lewis Jackson discovered people were living in abandoned houses and woods nearby, he knew it was time to offer more. That really was the catalyst to say the time is now, he said. We're not trying to do more than we could do, but we're going to get started. United in Christ Church is continuing its mission to help those in need with a free community dinner at 6 p.m. the second Wednesday of every month. It's just the latest in the church's long history of giving to those who live in its neighborhood. For years, United in Christ has given away free clothes, furniture, and home items during its annual summer giveaway, and it hosts an annual back-to-school bash. Free school supplies, food, pony rides, a petting zoo, and vendors with freebies will be at this year's bash at noon Saturday at the church, 538 East 31st Street. That giving spirit will continue with monthly meals, said Jackson, senior pastor of the church. We're in the community in any way that we can help the community. That's Christ being seen, he said. So this is our way of taking Christ and letting him be seen any way we can help, because we're part of the neighborhood. The church has toyed with the idea of offering a free meal for years, but feedback from attendees at the church giveaways and the congregation highlighted the need. One of the things we found out was we heard that the Christian Center is the closest place most of them can get to. But sometimes eating downtown is not as easy, church administrator and elder Lewis Jackson III said. Although one meal a month may not seem like much relief, Lewis Jackson Jr. said it chips away at food insecurity. He compared it to an old story of a boy walking along the beach after a major storm washes thousands of starfish onto the sand. As he tosses starfish back into the ocean, the naysayer comments that he won't be able to make much of a difference. But to each individual creature the boy saves, it will mean the world. We have to be what we preach, the senior pastor said. Our faith is in God, and we believe this is his timing. Associate Pastor Samuel Jackson said it will be another resource for those in need at Anderson and not just for food. Clothing left over from the giveaways will be available at the monthly meals for those who need it. Most of the clothing donated during the summer is for warm weather, so he hopes winter clothes and coat donations will come. We're now open to get it all year long because as soon as we get it, we'll give it, so we don't have to wait once a year to meet that need, he said. We're going to slowly meet that need every month. And the next is an article with the headline, High School Counselor Writes Book About Football Faith. New Albany, Indiana. At 34 years old, New Albany High School Counselor Justin Campbell has already accomplished enough to make any person proud. The happily married father of three has earned a bachelor's degree in business marketing and a master's degree in counseling. He played football for 4 years at Butler University at the running back position, well enough to receive an invite to the NFL Combine with a chance to impress team scouts for a spot on a professional roster. Earlier this year, Campbell added published author to the list of his accomplishments. Campbell's Christian motivational book, titled The New Complete You, Life Between the Lines, was released at the end of March. The book basically starts from my senior year of high school to my freshman year of college. The titles of each chapter outline what it took to do that, Campbell said. From the first chapter, Start Somewhere, to the last, The Victory, Campbell correlates his training as a football player with his path as a Christian. There's a lot of painful practices, but there's joys when you strap on Saturday. Your goal is to go to victory. In order for me to be a great Christian, I should be doing those same practices I was doing for football, he said. Campbell started playing football when he was in the fifth grade, considered a late kickoff by some standards. I didn't necessarily start early, but I had a lot of great coaches, he said. When I finally scored that first touchdown and felt what it was like to see my teammates cheer me on and the people on the sidelines, after that I wasn't afraid of the bigger people than me on the other team. I just wanted to feel that feeling again. It propelled me. Campbell had been toying with the idea of writing a book for around 7 years, jotting down ideas and notes periodically, but didn't start taking writing seriously until about a year and a half ago, he said. And now, an article with the headline, Pritzker Chooses Stratton as Running Mate, Dateline Chicago. Democratic candidate for Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker named State Representative Juliana Stratton to be his 2018 running mate Thursday, calling the Chicago attorney a fighter who hasn't been shy about standing up to Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and President Donald Trump. Juliana doesn't back down from a tough fight. That's why I need her at my side in this election, said Pritzker, one of more than a half dozen Democrats looking to unseat Rauner. Stratton is expected to help Pritzker in a crowded Democratic primary with two key voting blocks, women and black voters. She is the first woman on any Democratic gubernatorial ticket and an African-American who was born and raised on Chicago's South Side and sends her daughters to the same public school she attended. Stratton's daughter helped Pritzker introduce her to a cheering crowd, where Stratton talked up her work on criminal justice reform and her support for women's access to abortion and for a black community that has been ignored and suffered decades of disinvestment. She also criticized Rauner for a years-long state budget impasse that led to big cuts to social services and other programs. I haven't been in Springfield very long, but I've been there long enough to know that Bruce Rauner is not providing the leadership we need, Stratton said. When all of that is happening in the state that you're supposed to lead, you don't need to be looking for someone else to blame. You need to look in the mirror. The Illinois Republican Party criticized the choice, saying Stratton owes her political career, that's in quotes, to longtime Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan, Rauner's chief political rival. They called it the latest example of Pritzker, quote, doing everything possible to cozy up to Madigan, close quote. J.B. Pritzker is making it clear that he will allow the governor's office to be annexed over to Speaker Madigan, GOP spokesman Stephen Yaffe said. Stratton won the 2016 Democratic primary against Republican Ken Duncan in a race that was seen as a proxy war between Rauner and Madigan. The man's name is Durkin, not Duncan. Durkin was targeted by unions and other Democrats after he aligned himself with Rauner on some key issues, including voting against pro-labor legislation. The contest set a state record for spending in the state House primary, with allies of Rauner and Madigan pouring millions into ad buys and other expenses. President Barack Obama endorsed Stratton, taking the unusual step of recording radio and television spots for a candidate in a state House primary. Among the other Democrats seeking the party's nomination are State Senator Daniel Biss, businessman Chris Kennedy, and Chicago Alderman Amaya Pouar. None of them has picked a lieutenant governor candidate yet. Candidates for governor and lieutenant governor must run on the same ticket in Illinois under a state law that took effect in the 2014 election. Pritzker appears with his running mate in the 2018 election state. Oh, I'm sorry, that's what was under a picture. Next, I'm going to read you part of a editorial, but it goes on too long, and I may not be able to finish it before my time is up. So I will remark on that when I get to the end of my time. The title for the editorial is Rauner Should Authorize Borrowing to Pay Down Bill Backlog. In the months since a full-year state budget was approved after a two-year impasse, the backlog of bills has gone from a high $15.4 billion to $14.49 billion as of Tuesday. According to the Comptroller's Office, that happened because of paying down about $740 million in Medicaid payments, which was helped along by matching federal dollars, some interfund transfers, and using what revenue is coming into the state coffers. It's nice to see the backlog decrease instead of climb ever higher like it did in the past 2 years. But that amount, which let's not forget, is money owed to vendors, social service agencies, medical facilities, and more that have already provided services to the state, could be even lower if the governor takes action the General Assembly has authorized him to do. And it could save taxpayers some money along the way. As part of the budget approved in July, legislators gave permission to Governor Bruce Rauner to offer up to $6 million in bonds. Borrowing isn't the greatest way to solve the state's money woes. Effectively, borrowing against the pension system is what in large part got Illinois into the financial morass it's still slogging through. But Comptroller Susana Mendoza and State Treasurer Michael Frerichs have pointed out that even with Illinois' poor fiscal condition, borrowing can still be done at a lower interest rate than what Illinois pays on its overdue bills, a rate that can be as high as 12% and cost $2 million in late interest payments. Refinancing some of the remaining debt at a lower interest rate would save money while it's unknown what rate those bonds might get. Municipal market data reported that as of Monday, Illinois bonds due in 12 years were yielding 4.13%, according to a news report from Reuters. Equally important, refinancing will allow Illinois to more quickly pay back some of the many vendors who have been waiting for months to get what they're owed. The state governor's office has authorized the borrowing. Once that's done, The governor's office has to authorize the borrowing. Once that's done, the comptroller's office says the state can test the market to see what it will bear and advise how big of a bond sale to do. I have to quit now because my time is up. Sorry about that.